Three, two, one, go, Brett, go.
Hello and welcome
go, go,
to
go. Brett, go. What's taking so long?
I had to run, sorry.
You ruined everything.
I know.
You ruined everything.
No, I'm just kidding. Three, two, one.
Hello and welcome to the Inner Gamer episode 170. We are your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Bray Noski.
And I'm Awesome Rouse, and apparently I ruin everything.
Everything.
But you know what I won't ruin? This intro. But we'll see. Let's find out.
It's already ruined.
So today we're going to talk about two games that Brett played. Surprisingly, Brett played a game.
Yeah.
How amazing is that?
Oh my
Brett,
gosh.
You get a pat on the back. Good job. We talk about Lightfall and Timbleweed Park, both on the Switch. There you go. Brett pat himself on the back. We're also going to talk about Nintendo Switch's new revealed online details. Fortnite had a crossover and... there are hidden puzzles in Destiny 2 that leads to an actual real treasure. Amazing, Destiny. You did something cool. And for our discussion topic, we're going to talk about the cost of making video games, the highs, the lows, the endless spiral of money down the drain, and all that. So without further ado, cue the music!
Welcome to the Inner Gamer.
It is May 15, 2018. Welcome to the Inner Gamer Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, we would love for you to support us on Patreon for as little as $12 a year. That is $1 a month. That is way, way, way less than a dollar per day. You can make this podcast better, and we'll give you some goodies along the way. Like some of our lovely patrons, they are getting exclusive video content now. We're sending them like our discussion topic, fully unedited, ready to go. I mean, it's edited, obviously, because it looks beautiful, but it's like uncut, and yes, they can see our faces.
If you're not subscribing to Patreon, all you're getting is 2 to 3 clips every week on Thursday. So if you want the full... discussion topic live, go to patreon.com.
Well, not live, but like recorded and
it was recorded live. It's recorded live.
But live means that they would be watching us.
No, it doesn't mean that anymore. That's not true.
That's true. I don't know. But anyways, yeah, so you should do that. And then you also get some free games. You can join our Discord channel to play video games with us, like PUBG and Fortnite. We have all kinds of things. So go to theinnergamer.net, click donate to contribute, and or you can even do a one-time donation and just send us like $10 or $15 or $1,000. Anything works. It's fine.
Whatever's in your pocket, you know?
Yeah, whatever's in your pocket, which hopefully is more than 10 cents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's talk about some video games. We got two games to talk about. Both of them are coming from the guy that doesn't play video games, ironically. This is Brett. Yeah, me. It's all about me this
how
week.
How the tables have turned.
Literally tables have turned. They have turned entirely. So anyway, I want to talk about two games. The first one I want to talk about is a game called Lightfall. Lightfall came out a couple of weeks ago. It came out on, I'm trying to remember what day exactly it came out, April 26th. So it's been almost 3 weeks, actually. And this game is from Bishop Games. It's an indie developer that we did an interview with back at PAX South this year. So if you go to youtube.com/innergamer, click on our The Inner Gamer Invades playlist, you can see our interview with Ben, I believe was his name, from Bishop Games, talking about Lightfall. And he wouldn't reveal much about the story then, but I played through it. I've gone through a couple hours of the game. I haven't finished it or anything like that, but I've experienced some of the story. I've experienced the gameplay, et cetera, et cetera. The basis of this game is that you are in a world where everything is dark, and it's the world of Numbra. And your goal is to save the land from an imminent threat. And like I said, everything is completely dark. And it's a really cool, clever platformer in that you play this little black figure, this little character, this little boy who can create these mysterious boxes by pressing a button. And these boxes just appear underneath you. And you can do it up to, I think it's 3 or 4 times. And then once you do the fourth one, you have to land on a platform to recharge those boxes to create them to continue to platform across the map. And that creates a really cool gameplay mechanic because, you know, you have a vast expanse between platforms you have to get to. Well, you can use your boxes to jump, create a box, stop, jump, create a box, stop, and then eventually get to your other point. Or you can use it to climb up walls. And it also has a Celeste-esque ability in which you can actually hang onto walls a little bit, climb up, hang, climb up again, like jump, 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 and basically like grab on and cling onto them for a short period of time. You do fall down once you like grab onto it, but you can like use that to kind of boost yourself up the side of a wall. So that's
maybe
really
we just
cool.
want to play it right now, Brett.
I know. Yeah, you
I
should.
I may just do that.
Yeah. It's a cheap game. It's only $15, $14.99. And I really like it, but so here's the thing with me is I like it a lot, but it's not something that I see myself really excited to jump back into. And I can't really explain why. For me, the story isn't super gripping. Like the story is told by a little owl that as you like pass checkpoints, the owl pops up and like tells you this little piece of the story of Numbra and like what's happening and everything. And then there's parts where you can read text on the screen that explain to you some history and background to the world of what's happening. It's a beautiful game. Like the animation, the art style is really, really nice. It's very lots of purples and blues, very cold colors, not any warm colors necessarily, but it's a clever game from a mechanical perspective. And I don't think it's something that I play necessarily for the story, but I would definitely play if you like a clever platformer that's got a that's not just, I mean, it's different. It's definitely different. And I think that's worth checking out for that reason.
I don't know if you want to speak on this, but I know we discussed about, or you mentioned to me about how there's a lot of platforms out there now, like more so now, like you're making this comeback, and it seems like every indie game to some degree is going platformer.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I feel like they're all doing it differently or making it unique enough where it's like, oh, I want to try it out. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think so. There is a lot of platformers out there, and I feel like, especially on the eShop, Nintendo eShop, that there's, you know, 15 new platformers that are coming out every week almost. And all of them, I'm like, why do I want to play this versus that versus this thing? The reason why we found this one and actually it came to our light was the fact, the reason for that was because we saw it at PAX and we met the guys and we're like, oh, this has an interesting art style. I think that's the one way to like separate yourself is like, create an art style that's interesting to look at. Cause some of them, if they're all like 16-bit games, they're not that compelling without having some other mechanic to pull you into it. So like the reason why I got Celeste was because I was hearing about how hard it was and how good the story was. So that's why I picked this one up. This one, Lightfall, I picked up because of the art style. It actually reminds me a little bit of Ori and the Blind Forest.
Yes.
Not as pretty because Ori is like flipping gorgeous. Mm-hmm. But this one still has a lot of those effects to it. And just very, very neat objects and everything like that. But yeah, it's hard because there's a ton of platformers out there and it's like
a classic game mechanic and I don't know.
There's only so many platformers I want to play.
But I think it's one of those things that you can like if you pick it up, you understand the basics of it. There's not that huge
barrier to entry.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think like with this and other games like Aegis of Defenders, shout out to Aegis Defenders. Go check them out on Nintendo eShop and on Steam. Like they're doing something different with the visuals. You know, it's not just a Mario 16-bit game. Like they're adding higher, I want to say higher resolution to the environment and the graphics and stuff, but it's not really that technically, but they're adding a lot stuff to give this depth of field, to give it this mood, which I don't think you've really seen on a lot of other platformers. I mean, they do. They have this mood and stuff, but to the degree that these games like Lightfall and Aegis are doing, I think that's what really is compelling to me because these games, if they came out like 5, 10 years ago, never would have picked them up. For sure, never would have picked them up. helps to have a Nintendo Switch, but I think visually it's something that I feel like you want to jump in and play and see and feel and experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, that's just my opinion. I don't know.
Right.
How do you feel about that?
No, I think so. And I mean, yeah, it's something that it's hard for me to say. I can't really say it's a delay because it's $15. So if you want to play a fun, engaging platformer, like that's for the gameplay perspective, like I would pick it up. But if you're going in it expecting like a really engrossing story, I don't think it's necessarily there. Like the story for me is secondary to the gameplay mechanics.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I base it off of. So I guess it's a dig with an asterisk, depending on what you're looking for.
Right.
But there is a lot of cool stuff because with the they call it the Shadow Core. That's the little boxes that you can create. And if you're really clever with it and you can actually get to hidden areas and secret places that you wouldn't think were available to you without doing some exploration. So there is a slight exploratory aspect to it.
And that's how you find more of the story. Because each level, you have to go find these like hidden gem things that unlock. After you find them all in that level, it unlocks like a story bit.
Yeah, and I haven't done that in any of the acts yet because I'm really bad at finding them and platforming. So I have yet to unlock any of those story bits that are there. Like, there's a room you go to where you like have your four acts, and then it tells you like you have to keep progressing through it to unlock more of the story here or there or whatever. I haven't done it yet, but that's okay. But it's a cool game. I would recommend everybody check it out. Give it a playthrough and give it a rating on Steam, whatnot. It doesn't seem like it's very long, so that's that's cool.
Yeah.
So give it a try.
Very nice.
All right, so this other game I got to talk about. This is like completely different.
What is this?
Level.
I don't think I've heard of
Thimbleweed it. Thimbleweed Park. This came out last year, so it's been out for a while. And
Brad, what are you doing playing a year old game?
Well, there's a reason for it. It's on the Switch now. So, okay. Yeah, it just came out on the Switch not too long ago. Yeah, so it came out, let's see, March 30th of 2017, last year. But then it just came out on the Switch. It's developed by a team called Terrible Toy Box. And Thimbleweed Park is like your old school, and I'm talking super old school adventure game. Like, think, I'm blanking on the names right now. Old school adventure games, LucasArts, I think is who develops some of these things. Maniac Mansion, Monkey Island, Day of the Tentacle, those kinds of games. So that's basically what this game is like. And like when you start out, you are investigating a murder. You're in Thimbleweed Park. There's a dead body. And then there are going to be eventually five playable characters that you use to uncover the secrets of this town. And an adventure game. And actually, it's from the creators of Monkey Island and Maniac Mansion. So that makes a lot of sense. But you go up to objects like you have on screen. You can actually, this is one of the few games on the Switch that takes full advantage of the touchscreen controls. Like I can like undock the side controllers and just touch the screen to do the stuff.
That's
and
cool.
It's actually more intuitive than it is to use a controller.
Take a look at this game.
So it's pretty cool. But it's got this really old school art style to it. And you just explore. It's a point and click adventure game. So as you're navigating through different things, you start out, you're a detective, you have Agent Reyes, and you have the other agent whose name has escaped me, but she's a redheaded agent. And they're both very different, but also they don't like each other right off the bat. They're like, we both came here to Thimbleweed Park and we don't want to talk to each other. But they have to work with each other to solve this mystery. So you start at this lake and there's a dead body and you start exploring the body. So you can do different actions on different things, such as like you can open things, pick things up, push things, close, look, pull, give, talk to, use. And you have like an item list per character. And as you're wandering around, you click on different objects, you interact with them in different ways, and you learn story bits or pick up new pieces. And ultimately your goal is to solve the murder. And, you quickly realize that this game is very apparent of itself and that it is a game and they know that it's a game. So there's parts where it gets really meta and starts to like basically talk about itself from a third person perspective. Like there's a part where one of the characters says, okay, so this cutscene is going on way too long. What am I going to do about this situation? Like, I can't, I got to figure out how to progress this cutscene further. What should I do? And they're like basically talking to the player in the third person about their own experience that they're doing in the game.
That is great.
And that happens constantly. Like, it's everywhere spewed throughout it. So like the story bits are happening and they're also like talking about how gamey this game is. And I find that to be really interesting. And, there's a part where you go through this flashback because you're everybody's talking about this clown who's like this crazy person. His name is Ransom with an E, and he's a clown that basically insults people for making money. So instead of being like the nice, friendly clown that's all nice, like good to people, he's a jackass. And he swears a lot. So whenever he swears, they have to cut it out. Yeah, I guess. But this is, I mean, he's normally a clown for kids, right? And this time he's not. So you play it. You go to this flashback playing as him. And you have to get this money back to get your joke book back. So you have to do four things. You have to get your joke book back. You got to put makeup on. You got to put your nose on, blah, blah, blah. And then there's a part where you go out on stage. And you have to, you have no choice but to insult people in the audience. So there's a woman that's got a big nose. So you look at like, oh, look at that woman with the big nose. She's got such a big nose. She's ugly. I don't know why she's even here. Gosh, she's so ugly. I can't even imagine like what it would be like looking like her. And then so she starts crying. So you start making fun of these people and all of them start crying around you. And then there's even a kid in a wheelchair. And I was like, I'm going to wait till the very last minute to pick him. But I had to progress the story. So I pick on him. He's like, oh, look at that kid in the wheelchair. I feel sorry for him. In addition to that, they also made him ugly. So he's got two things that are wrong with him. He's in a wheelchair and he's ugly. That sucks. I'm like, shit, this guy's an ass. And
wow.
So then he gets what he deserves through a series of events, the jackass clown. And so now he's living in Thimbleweed Park. And Thimbleweed Park is just fucked up. Like, there's this part where you go talk to the sheriff and you tell the sheriff, like, hey, there's this criminal that... or this guy that died, and he always ends things with Reno. So he's like, oh, welcome to Thimbleweed Park. My name is Sheriff Reno. And let me tell you, Reno, about this thing that we're going to do here, Reno. And he just continually does that. And it's like,
voice acting?
Drives people annoying. Oh, it's completely voice acted, which is awesome. Voice acting solid. It's really good.
Wow.
And so then... then he's like, why don't you go down to see the coroner of Reno and talk to him about the dead bodies and stuff like that.
Is he Texan or just country?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's like country. Like, okay. It's like the middle of nowhere kind of town. And so then you go down to the coroner's office, and the coroner, oddly enough, looks a lot like the sheriff, except in a coroner's outfit. And then instead of him saying Reno, he says like some other, I forgot what the phrase was, but he says another phrase at the end of it. He's basically the same person, but he won't admit it. So you're like fishing to get him to admit to it so that you actually have dialogue options to say like, aren't you the coroner? And he's like, no, Reno. I mean, he like adjusts himself in the conversation and he will not admit to it. So there's all these cool like dialogue choices. And, oh, it's so corny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Corny, weird, like off color. Like there's so like this is not a kid's game for sure, right. But it's a game that knows it's a game and it takes advantage of that for it's like
additional Deadpool,
fun.
But not Deadpool.
Exactly. It's just like Deadpool. Yeah. Like that kind of humor.
You break the fourth wall or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to know, what would you give it? Dig, Ditch, Delay.
So far it's Dig. I like it. I'm really enjoying it. It's a $20 game. I don't know how long it is, but like if you like these kind of adventure, I've never played an adventure game like this.
Right.
I mean, I played Day of the Tentacle briefly. And it is a little hard getting used to that kind of old school mechanic, but of like clicking through things and it's all that stuff. But it is it's fun for the story and the gaminess. And there's like two different modes. So there's a casual mode, which is basically like, I just want the story and don't want to have to fuck around with puzzles. Or there's like the regular mode, which I've heard is like incredibly hard because the puzzles are incredibly hard. And I'm doing the casual mode.
Yeah.
But it's cool because as you're walking, there's these little like flyers up on the wall and you go to the flyer and then it's got, you know how like there's people that at like old gas stations or whatever, they put these flyers up that have little pull tabs that say, take one if you want to call me for, you know,
whatever,
lawn care, whatever. Well, there's those flyers up there and they got pull tabs for like need help in Thimbleweed Park. pull this tab for a hint and text this number. And I think, you don't text in real life, but it's like you have a cell, one of the characters has a cell phone in the game.
Yeah, that's pretty smart.
Call that number and get a hint for how to progress to the story.
That's it. That is, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So there's a lot of neat little nuggets like that that are just really fascinating.
Huh.
I don't know. I was very, very surprised. So I remember when this game, we talked about this game way back in 2017. I was like, I'm going to get this. I never did. And I was waiting for like the right moment. And with the Switch, I felt like it was the right moment. Yeah. So I jumped on it.
Yeah, I've had to judge a book by its cover. I definitely judge that as one I would not want to play.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sounds cool. I don't like the graphics and artistic style they went with.
Yeah. I didn't at first, but I've grown on it, and I actually really like it now.
It feels like one of those games I played when I was a kid on like first playing. God, there is one about like fairy tale books or something. I play, I don't know, one of those old schools you play on like the DOS or like early PC, I don't know, like learning, one of those learning games that we used to play back in the day.
Yeah,
which is technically like one of my first games. So anyway, cool. Yep. Man,
yep. So that's Thimbleweed Park.
One dig with an asterisk.
Yep, dig with an asterisk and a dig. And there we go. So that's what we got to talk about this week.
Next week, I will have a game to play to talk about.
Yeah.
It's not PUBG or Fortnite.
Good luck with that.
Nice.
So anyway, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with our video game news. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
It is time for our video game news. In this segment, we share the best headlines from the week in the gaming industry. First up on our list, we have Nintendo Switch has detailed their online service finally. We're getting some information about what it's going to include, one of which is we are not getting Virtual Console branded as Virtual Console. Instead, we are going to be getting some free games that are included with the subscription service. Starting out with a collection of NES games. There's going to be 20 of them at launch that you'll be able to play. The 10 that they've announced are Balloon Fight, Donkey Kong, Dr. Mario, Ice Climber, The Legend of Zelda, Mario Bros., Soccer, Super Mario Bros., Super Mario Bros. 3, and Tennis. So you'll get these titles. And in addition to that, they've added a playable online feature for these games. So depending on the type of game, players can engage in online competitive or co-op multiplayer on these classic NES games, or take turns controlling the action. Friends can even play with each other single player games online and quote unquote pass the controller over the internet digitally. So
interesting.
That's kind of cool.
Interesting.
So we're going to get NES games. We're going to get 10 more of those. There's also a possibility that we're going to see consistent drops of these over time, maybe. So it's kind of Virtual Console, but it's not Virtual Console as it was known before. It's different. And there's also going to be voice chat, of course, through the Nintendo Switch Online app. In addition to that, the service offers subscribers the ability to back up their game data via cloud saves. Finally, you can actually back up your thing. So between now and September, it's the only time you have left to brick your Switch and lose all your save data. So take advantage of it while you can.
So I heard one controversy about this is that, you know, usually you get the online stuff to play online, right? Because all that's about to be locked behind this paywall.
Yeah, Splatoon 2, Mario Kart, all that will be paywalled.
But you have to also buy this online feature to back up your saves. So it's like, why not just have an auto cloud system that backs up your saves without having to pay for this? Because some people don't play multiplayer. Like, I don't play Mario Kart online. I don't play Splatoon anymore. Like, there's all these games that I don't play. The only reason I'm going to get this is, I get a few free games, which is great. Awesome. But, and to back up my saves. Like, that's the main two reasons. But mostly, I want to back up my saves. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like, it's hard to justify that when there's this price point. Yeah, the price point isn't that bad, but
I mean, let's be real. It's $20 for a year.
But some people are just doing it to back up their saves. $20 for backup? What the hell?
And then 20 free games.
What if you don't want those free games?
It's $20, man. You're getting you're basically getting 20 games for a dollar a piece. 20 games for a dollar.
Yeah, but what if you don't play any of those games? What if you don't enjoy those games?
Well, then you're paying $20 back of your saves, and then have the ability to play Mario Kart online. I heard one person talk about it,
and I agree. It is kind of shitty. It's like, why not just have like everyone has just a free cloud backup thing?
Well, so the reason I'm perfectly justified with this because they have to pay for servers. So how are they going to pay for the servers? They're not going to give you free servers just because they sold you a $300 console. Your console's there. You have to store it online somewhere. How else are you going to store it online other than paying for that? I mean, people pay $2.99 a month for cloud backups for their iCloud photo storage, which I do, or they're backing up their system. So if you don't, if you have iCloud backup on your phone to back up your phone, like you have to do that. You're paying for it because you have to pay for servers storage. And that's cheap. It's way cheaper than it used to be. So...
Well,
it's just paying for storage.
I guess you win this one, Brett.
Yeah. And then Dropbox, like you pay for Dropbox to store your stuff online. Like there's all that stuff that comes into it. I mean, you can easily, you can leave it on your device.
Where is my iCloud?
You can leave it on your device and just hope that it doesn't crash. So you're not, you don't have to do it. But if you don't want to lose your backups, you're literally paying $20 a year. Granted, you can put that $12 or that $20 towards the Inner Gamer and get almost equal benefit. You know,
no backups, but I mean,
yeah, no backups, but you can play with us in Discord. You don't have to download the Nintendo Switch app. You can just join us in Discord, but yeah, or 1 month is $4. So that's cool. Let's see. So, but here's the other thing that's kind of cool too. So now here's a trick. They haven't this, I don't know if the, if there's a weird workaround with this, but the Switch subscriber online thing allows you to invite up to 7 other Nintendo account holders, even on different consoles, into a family group and have the same benefits. So technically, the Inner Gamer is a family. You and I could share a $20 membership subscription, and it's only $10 a piece. Add a third person on there, then it's only, what's 20 divided by 3? Like $6 a piece. A little bit more than $6 a piece. So there's that benefit too.
Okay.
If you get other people on board with it.
I see. There you go. Okay.
Not that bad.
All right. There's some good stuff in this.
Not that bad.
I mean, I want it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, so I get it.
They haven't announced yet if you're going to get stuff from other consoles. So there's the Super NES or N64, but I'm pretty certain that they will. I mean, they wouldn't have gone through the trouble of building the Super NES Classic if they didn't have intentions to modernize those systems. So, yeah. So we'll see how that goes. But that's cool that we are going to get some games. And remember, there's still that free game per month that's going to be a situation where you can download a game that you have access to for a month. And after that, I think it's going to be like something you can buy. But during that month, part of the service is you get to play something for free. So you got that too. So it's sounding good. It's coming out soon. Prepare yourself. It's going to be good. Oh, and they did say that Splatoon 2 is going to have like a groundbreaking feature or something amazing that they're going to announce at E3 they haven't revealed yet that's going to like blow people's minds. So I don't know what that entails. Like, I don't know. But the way they talk, they're like talking this up big. They're talking a big game.
Okay.
And
all right.
Yeah. So there might be something really cool that makes it worthwhile to jump back into the game again. Speaking of really good stuff, Fortnite. Avengers.
Yeah, we like Fortnite now, by the way.
They had a baby.
They did have a baby.
And they brought in Thanos to Fortnite. So they have a new mode that's temporary. It's the Infinity Gauntlet mode that's played solo. And 99 people are in this map versus you. And you have one life. The twist is that there's a comet containing the Infinity Gauntlet. And when that comet drops, no matter where you are, it's going to drop on the map and it's a race to see who can get it first and equip it. Once they equip it, they become Thanos. And they are kind of badass.
Yeah, you could jump really high. You can shoot the power gauntlet laser, which is purple, at people. And when you punch people, you basically, it's almost like a one-hit kill. I think if you hit them twice, they just automatically die. If you hit them twice and they have a shield on fully, then yeah, it's two hits and they die. And then you can destroy everything. It's pretty awesome. Yeah, when you jump in the sky, you come rocketing down like a meteor with your glove and just do this like area effect damage. Small area effect, but you destroy a lot of shit. And it's actually pretty scary going up against Thanos because he has the same voice from the movie and he has all these weird sounds for his fighting that's like pretty pretty crazy. Did you ever get jump in and play it yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Did you? It's definitely, yeah, I have. Yeah. I was trying to, I almost got the glove twice, but it didn't work out. And what I didn't realize is that people were fighting you. Will fight you. It's still like 100 or 50 people. I forgot. I don't know.
It's 100.
It's 100. Yeah. Okay. In the small circle. Well, I guess it's a whole map. And it's still, you know, 100
everybody
people.
Against everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was everyone against Thanos.
No.
It's not. Which I think that's kind of a... I think they should have done that. I think that would have been a lot better. Anyway.
I don't know. I kind of like it though. Because it's like...
Cool. Yeah, it's cool.
Everybody... It's kind of like when the airdrop... drops in PUBG, everybody's racing that airdrop, and then people are like either gonna go for the airdrop or they're gonna camp the airdrop and wait for them to get there and try and kill them.
Yeah.
So this is the same concept. But if you get there and successfully get Thanos, then you're a force to be reckoned with.
Yes.
You can like wreak some havoc on the world. But this way it's not like everybody's got one goal and that goal is to kill Thanos. I feel like that would get old really fast. Because if you're just trying to kill Thanos, like once you kill him, he's dead. And for the Thanos guy, I mean, it'd be a blast because you're just sitting there just like punching people left and right. But as a player trying to kill him, like there's no unexpectedness to the gameplay. It's like somebody becomes Thanos, you gotta go attack him and take him out.
Everyone's working together to take him out, but then everyone's rushing to the gauntlet to get it.
Well, I mean, I'm talking after the fact. Like once somebody becomes Thanos,
yeah.
Like there's just one goal and there's no like surprise moments that happen. It's just let's kill Thanos and chase him down.
So my issue is that if you're not fighting against Thanos, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess it makes sense to some degree. I just feel like everyone killing each other and then Thanos being out there, it's way easier for Thanos to win than, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I guess it wouldn't make sense with...
I still wonder if, like, because Thanos...
Yeah,
like, in my
sense.
Mind,
it
like, I haven't played it yet, but, like, in my mind, if Thanos was there and he was a threat out in the world, I feel like even though it wasn't, like, a forced let's all target Thanos, I feel like people are more inclined to, like, kind of form mini alliances.
Yeah.
Even though they know that they're enemies at that moment.
Yeah,
but, like, take him down because he's a bigger threat to them at that moment than everybody else is.
Yeah.
So let's take care of him first. Let's all collectively kill him, and then I'm going to kill all you.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of deal.
I get it.
But it's not, like, forcing you to do that. It's a choice that everybody's making. So that creates that unexpected quality that we love out of Fortnite and what we love about Battlefield and all these things where there's, like, these unexpected moments that you don't realize are going to happen. So I don't know, but I played it. So I don't know.
I go back on my thoughts. I agree. Yes. It's good. It's good. It's all good. Yeah. Regardless. Yeah. It's good.
Nice. Nice. What's not good. Well, this is actually good, but not good for the guy.
Yeah.
But, about a year ago, I believe it was 2010. There was a, guy who did a series of DDoS attacks. That's a denial of service attack that caused World of Warcraft servers to crash and prevent paying customers from accessing the game. The this guy, his name was Kalen Mateus. And the reason for him doing the DDoS attack is he had a beef with some other players. So he was like, screw it, I'm just going to attack the entire system. And he was indicted for the crime in 2011 following an investigation by the FBI. But was only extradited to the U.S. to face justice last year. So he's been in custody since November 2017, and he agreed to plead guilty to a single count of intentional damage to a protected computer. And then in exchange, the government dropped charges related to an attempted hack and robbery of another place in 2004. So apparently he did something else. So this isn't his first offense, but they dropped charges for that if he pled guilty to this. So he's got a one-year prison sentence that he was put to, and he has to pay $30,000 in restitution to Blizzard to cover the cost of defending against his attacks. So justice is served.
You fucked up, dude. You fucked up.
Yeah.
I feel like this is the first precedence of this. Like someone actually going to prison for doing something like this. Because you had those people doing the DDoS attacks on Sony's online system.
Yeah.
And I think there was one on Xbox. I could be wrong about that.
No, there was. Yeah.
Okay.
It was like the Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
People were pissed. They were like, it's Christmas time and I can't play Xbox.
Yeah. That really sucks. Yeah. My God, I have to go down to my parents. Ah, hang out with my family. But yeah, this hasn't happened before, has it? Like, I don't know anyone that's gone to jail because of this stuff or prison.
I mean, it's happened, but it's not very common because usually you don't know who it is. It's just like some unspecified hacker group that goes by many names that you don't know where they are. Mm.
So this guy got fucked because he got found out.
Yeah, basically.
That sucks. Well,
so that's that.
You live, you learn. Sometimes you go to jail.
He loves the diapers.
Yeah. Yeah. He's going to need them.
Yeah, right. There is a new, so, you know, we've had all these like mini consoles that have been coming out, these little mini things that like go back to the olden days of video games. SNK, which I guess is responsible for the Neo Geo games, is bringing out the Neo Geo Mini. Now, if you guys have a Switch, you know that Neo Geo has been dropping all these little old school games to the eShop many, many, like multiple times a week almost. You're getting them left and right. So I think they took all of those games and they put them into a retro hardware, which the Neo Geo used to be this big, huge arcade cabinet. Well, then they shrunk it down into this little mini thing that you can buy now at the store. It's got 40 games loaded onto it and a 3.5-inch LCD screen. And we don't know when it's coming out or the pricing, but it looks pretty cool. It's got a little joystick. It's got buttons. So it's basically looking like a arcade cabinet, but like the size of Kratos on our table here.
Yeah. No, which, that's cool. I mean, I think these things are really awesome. I mean, it's a little archaic, I feel like, at this point in time. Like, I don't know if you need something like this, a system like this, for any reason. Nostalgia, cool. I mean, if you're a collector, awesome. But
I completely agree, actually.
I don't see this being a huge hit and making a shit ton of sales.
It's like a one-time use kind of thing. It's like, why buy this when, like, if you can get them on the Switch, just get them on the Switch. Like, this is, I mean, it's cool for the nostalgia for a couple weeks, but after that, it's like, I don't really care about it anymore. So, I don't know. Yeah. It's neat, but it's like, really?
I mean, it's kind of like
so much classic going on.
The SNES and the Super NES.
Yeah, which those were cool because that's like the beginning of history of gaming.
Yeah.
That's when, like, gaming was... That's like,
yeah,
the moments of gaming.
The moment of gaming.
Anyway. So this next story is just hilarious and
give it
weird
to me, Brett.
And weird. So EVE Online is a game that's still going strong many, 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 many years later. This game just blows my mind how it's become what it's become. But EVE Online, after it's been many years since this started, but they have. The players' base created a thing called the Council of Stellar Management, also known as CSM. And the CSM consists of 10 players who are chosen from EVE to represent the player base in communicating with and advancing the development of EVE Online with the developers. So the player base of EVE is so big that, you know, there was a time where, you know, the player base was trying to get their word out there, posting in forums and saying like, oh, this update is shitty. This like messed up this thing or this affected this issue or whatever. And there's just so much noise out there that they couldn't keep it all straight. And the developers are obviously doing whatever they can to make it work, but it's only so much you can do. So the EVE community as a whole was like, well, let's form a basically mini government to represent us and put our message out there in a more easy to digest way. So these 10 people are the intermediaries between the community and the development team. And they sit down and have meetings with the development team to talk about what the players want and make sure that they're clear in that understanding. And what's happening now is that there's a real life politician whose name is game, Brisk Rubel, who is running for one of the positions in the Council of Stellar Management because he has real world political experience in Virginia and thinks that he could bring that to the world of EVE Online.
Before we even go there, like, can we talk about this council? Like, I think it's fascinating that they have something like this.
Yeah.
It's a video game.
Yeah.
I feel like this is kind of something that you don't need for a video game, because you have people out there, you have personalities who kind of represent gamers already, and like you have forums, you can put out questionnaires like how to make the game better. I mean, I think it's interesting. Part of it makes it easier for the game developer, but I just feel like it's a little funny.
Yeah. Well, what
do you think?
Yeah, I think it's
making this too much into a joke.
Well, it is. It's funny in the context of every other game in the world.
Yeah.
But with EVE Online, I feel like it's not that outrageous, because what EVE has become is it's another world. It's literally another virtual world. Like, you can buy property, ships in this game that are worth hundreds of thousands of real life dollars. Like, it's they've created that much value in this game somehow. It's got its own inner working economy that's like real world economy style stuff. There's politics and there's like all these things that happen, and yeah, I mean, there's battles and factions and fights that take place that last years, and like things that just, I don't know, they're just mind blowing, and it's all centered around this. Yeah, like there's so much to this game that I don't know how the development team even keeps it together. But I was looking on the website. So they say, like, there's a question, like, what is a CSM? And it says that they are a player advocacy group consisting of 10 members democratically elected by the players to advise and assist CCP, the development team, on the continuous development of EVE. The CSM brings focused, structured feedback from the community to CCP and represents its views and interests. Yeah. So they have to be elected democratically. They have regular online meetings and direct access to chat channels with development staff. The CSM may be asked to attend on-site summits in Iceland in person when they have the opportunity to take part in high-intensity work sessions with the EVE teams. Every member of the council will have a chance to join remotely if they're unable to attend, and every member can request summit sessions with specific teams or specific topics. CCP will cover the cost of flights, lodging, and transfers within Iceland for those attending CSM summits. So, like, it's basically like having a board for your organization.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I don't get this
game. This game is too much. As a casual gamer, I don't understand this. Like, why would this is a whole, obviously, you said this is a whole other world. What the hell? And you need a council on it? Like, holy geez. And he have this politician. Doesn't he have enough on his plate to jump on this bandwagon?
Dude,
is he trying to get votes off of EVE players?
No, he's been playing it for a while, and he's like passionate about it.
Man, well, good on him for, you know, gaming and politics can work together in a way. Not like we've seen it here recently, just a few months ago. Anyway.
It's funny, he also made a campaign video, which is really cringy to watch.
Oh, I gotta watch that. Go watch this, people. I want to know your thoughts. You know, we're gonna post some social media about this. I want to know what people think about this guy's video.
So here's one of the quotes from the video. He's been playing EVE since 2006. Everything from high sec missions, low sec PvP shenanigans, and now null sec sovereignty warfare. I got my start in MMORPGs playing Star Wars Galaxies in 2003, and eventually became a member of their equivalent of the CSM, a basic profession correspondent. That was the first time I elevated myself above merely playing a game to helping the community. But his real life job is working in the maritime government or something of that nature in Virginia. But yeah, anyway, there's an article on Kotaku. If you look up the real life politician of EVE Online, there's two videos in there. One is his campaign video. His name's Shonmin. And then there's also a video explaining the Council of Stellar Management and the members that are part of it. The current one, which is CSM 11. It's really funny.
Interesting. Very interesting.
All right. So last thing we got to talk about. This is from Destiny 2. As I mentioned, if you guys watched our pre-recording stream on Instagram, we were talking about we have some Destiny news. This is that Destiny news. So Warmind just came out, the new expansion for Destiny 2. If anybody cares, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not.
It's dead. Destiny's dead. Why are we talking about this?
There is a Warmind expansion that just released. And in there was some conversation of players that are very curious that started seeing that there was a icon, an engram or something inside the game that had like a lock and key and like symbolism on it. They're like, huh, that's interesting. So a subreddit began, as it always does, and people were working to figure out what this puzzle was. And they collectively worked together to break down the fact that this led to a real-time treasure cache. And there was a message they got after they, you know, unlocked and learned what the puzzle was. And it said, thank you for taking the time to piece together this message, friend. It's a time of our final conflict, or the time of our final conflict is drawing closer, and you and Anna have an important role to play in the events to come. So watch over her, guardian. I would have no life without Anna to the X program. I regret that we have become strangers, but we have a path that we must walk. And ironically, there never seems to be enough time. Tell her Rasputin's first attempt was in the right location, but the wrong moment. Look here, and there was coordinates. And those coordinates led to upstate New York, which is very close to the lead developer of War Mind, Vicarious Visions. And they found what was like a long tube, and inside of it contained a treasure. And there was a note that said, congratulations for discovering our riddle. We've worked hard. We're glad you found this, blah, blah, blah. There's a notebook here. Write in how you found it. Give some information about your thoughts about finding it. Take a coin, leave the rest, and then walk away. So it's meant to be like a real life cache that they want people to find and discover and hope that people come back to it repeatedly, which I'm not surprised that somebody might go there and just steal all of it, but so far it's there and it's pretty cool. So they sent them on a real life hunt and discovered some goodies along the way. So yeah, Destiny 2 had a little real life ARG kind of thing.
That's interesting. Yeah, this is really interesting. I didn't think they'd ever do something like this. This is really cool. Like this kind of stuff, I'm like, I'm surprised people do it, especially for in a video game. I mean, I get the whole like cache thing. Like, I know there's like an app or something you can go geo hunting or
geocaching. Yeah.
It's really cool. Like, I tried to do it once, didn't work out too well. Almost got killed. No, I'm just kidding. Me and Travis did it one time. We tried to find some, but it just didn't work out.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But this is really cool. And you get a collector's thing. Like,
yeah, I mean,
that's pretty sweet.
Got something to take home with you,
man. The internet is a crazy place where it's just hard to believe that some of these people find some of these things. Like, people are dedicated to like finding hidden clues about stuff and then slowly putting things together. And it's just like, how did y'all even find out about it? And then, let alone developers putting these clues in there, it's like, I don't understand.
This is a fun puzzle.
This is crazy. Like, yeah. I love hearing about it. I would never want to go and search and put the time into it, but
right.
It's cool that this stuff exists and it's out there, especially this. This is very unique.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there we go. That's all we have for the news this week. If there's something that we missed, we want to hear from you. Email us at hello@thinnergamer.net and we will talk about it next week. Don't forget, if you like what you hear, please give us a review and rating on iTunes. All you have to do is download the Apple Podcast app, go look up the Inner Gamer Podcast, click on leave a review, and write your review. That will help us get discovered better when people search for a video game podcast. So we would love for you guys to do that and help bring more listeners to the show. So we will be right back after the break with our discussion topic. So stay tuned.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Brett, what are we talking about this week?
Today,
this is a good discussion.
Today we're going to talk about the cost of making video games. The cost is at an ever-growing heightened pace. It gets more and more expensive every year. And the reason why this conversation started was because
we were drunk yesterday and we talked about it.
Yeah,
Partly.
I mean, maybe Austin was drunk. I'm just kidding. Tipsy, maybe. I don't know. But either way,
beers were involved.
There were some beers involved. But anyway, there was an article that came out on Kotaku about Shadow of the Tomb Raider, which is coming out later this year. And it said that it was an estimated $75 to $100 million to create this game. That is the cost of development. That does not include the marketing budget, which is an additional roughly $35 million. So we're talking over $100 million to develop a game with no backing of whether or not it's going to succeed. So it's like there's a lot on the line.
It's a huge gamble, yeah.
It's a huge, huge gamble. And $100 million is actually on the lower end of the price point with AAA budget title or AAA titles.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. So back on my notes here, the I'm gonna pull up my notes over here.
Yeah, you should probably do that.
I got notes.
But
I can't read my notes.
Anyway. Basically the answer is gobs of money. It costs gobs and gobs of money.
Gobs of money. So like development teams now have literally hundreds of employees. Like I think Shadow of the Tomb Raider has a little bit over 400, maybe 500 employees. I know Destiny has about 500-600 employees working for them. Like that's a lot of people. Now imagine these people aren't just like pencil pushers or anything like that. They are like programmers and developers and designers and artists and all these things that are getting paid salaries of like $50,000-$60,000 a year, maybe $70,000-$90,000 a year. So the article talks about like, what if you break that down to 400 people, each one's getting paid $10,000 a month. That is $400,000 a month you are spending to keep these people employed, right? To make a game that's not going to come out for like 4 or 5 years from now, maybe, or 3 or 4 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's no wonder like Call of Duty is like doing a yearly cycle of releases because they got to fund the next two games they're trying to work on. Which is crazy. So there's that whole debacle that comes into play with it.
So just to put it in perspective, I have a list off of Wikipedia of the most expensive games developed. First one is Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2.
Wait, is that in order? Like,
it should be.
Is that sorted? Because
can you sort this?
Yeah, you can sort the marketing costs.
Grand Theft Auto 5 was the most with $265 million
makes
to make.
Sense.
Modern Warfare 2 was $250. Star Wars The Old Republic was 200 plus. So I don't know what was involved with that. With Destiny coming in at 140 million. Destiny 1. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Man.
It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. Dollar bills, yo. Dollar bills.
Dollar bills.
So it's obviously expensive. And
oh, here we go. We got inflation here. So Grand Theft Auto 5 with inflation is $278 million. Modern Warfare 2 is $285 million. And then Old Republic was at $218 million.
Wow.
All with inflation.
Okay. So
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. So another thing to think about too is that when you develop a game, and most people don't realize this, but like a game comes out, retails for like $59.99. Well, mm-hmm. if you make a physical game, the publisher itself will only end up getting roughly $30 per game. So half what is made spent to what they use to sell the game. Digital gets about $42 per unit sold. That goes to the publisher. So they get a lot more. So there's a reason why they start shifting to digital, because you get more money, more bang for your buck, basically.
Yep.
But that's a one-time fee. And then that's all you get out of it. So that's probably why, you know, we all complain about microtransactions, and we complain about microtransactions a lot. Like we did a huge discussion about it last year. And unfortunately though, like with prices getting so high to make these games, it's kind of why these have to exist. Like it's a necessity to like the reason why we're seeing games as a service, the reason why we're seeing microtransactions, the reason why these things are starting to come out is that they need to create more income to cover those costs over time to then be able to generate the next game. So like Destiny 1 put in the Eververse to sell microtransactions to help fund or offset the cost of making Destiny 2.
Right.
You know, Fortnite brought out a free game, their concept is like amass a bunch of numbers, get tons of people playing it because the cost of admission is nothing, and then get you into the game and then start charging you. So like once they're charging you for these battle passes and things of that nature, that money will start coming in and help fund future development of that game. So the upfront cost is obviously very high, but you have that continual residual coming in that will hopefully cover the initial part was and then help pay continued content development.
Right.
But then that means you have to keep developing the game after that.
Right.
Which is crazy.
It just doesn't end, but you are making money, but I guess it's like, when do you stop?
I guess when you start making, stop making money.
Yeah.
It's when you stop. I mean, it's become a huge, I mean, I think we've seen the shift for, I mean, it's always been kind of like this, this is a money, like you want to make money, but you want to create art. And now we've kind of come to a point where it's like, yeah, we're making art. I think Epic Games is more about making art, but they are about making money. I think it's more of that. It's always been like that, but I think more so now. What do you think, Brett? Is that too far-fetched to say? Or has it always been about making money along with making the art? I mean, we see bigger companies who just want to make money pushing out stuff that's not high quality, but it's just good enough to get away. Well, I mean, it is high quality, but
yeah,
I guess the overall experience is not up to par.
I think it depends who we're talking about. Like, I feel like Activision has lost a lot of that. They're more focused on like the dollar count as a publisher. Like, the developers may not want that, but a publisher, like, they... their bottom line is basically, how can we exert every last dollar out of this?
Exactly.
EA's kind of getting, EA's kind of getting that way a little bit. Battlefield's still like roughly safe, but we saw that with Battlefront last year. Like, they were, let's get even more dollars out of it. But it's like, this conversation kind of helps support like why these publishers do this. It's not because they're greedy assholes that want to take everything. Their risk is so high, they can't afford to lose that investment. So they have to come up with these, what seems to be unfair ways to the player to make sure that they're getting their investment covered.
Right.
Because otherwise they're going to be one and done. And like, we heard that with Yonaman when we had our discussion with Yonaman Nordhagen about his game and like how they put, they got all this press and all this publicity and everything like that. He put a bunch of money into it, which wasn't a lot for the grand scheme of things, but for him, it's an expensive game.
Right.
And he never broke even.
More than we would put into a game.
Yeah. And like, that's crazy. And that's small fry talk versus a $100 million budget game.
Right.
Like, that's just like light years different.
So you want kind of to compare free to play and paid games real quick, or do you want to wait to do that later?
Later.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess we can talk about now. So yeah, free to play versus paid.
So my shtick is that I think free to play in this day and age might be the best way to go opposed to paid. So it's either you put a shit ton of money up front, you know, say $100 million to make a game, which you hope will make that money back and more when it's released. But that's such a huge gamble when you take Epic and they took 2 months to create Fortnite. Obviously, they already put money into the game, like all those assets and stuff ahead of time. But 2 months, create
only
this game.
Only 7 years of development.
Yeah. They took all these assets. They created a game in 2 months and now it's made them $50 million come season four. And I feel like doing a free-to-play game might be the best way to go to, in the sense of like gaining revenue, because you get a lot of people in there. Yes, it has to be a good game, but you're able to allow people to pay what they want. The season pass for Fortnite is $10. So you have this already solid game that you can play and not pay anything and have a great experience, or instead of paying a $60 price for this game, you just pay $10 and you get a plethora of stuff. And on top of that, with the season pass, if you, what was it? I think David was saying, David's one of our guys in our Discord channel. He was saying that you can get up to like 1700 V-Bucks.
Oh yeah, Josh was saying that, yeah.
And that pays for your season pass for the next season. So technically, you just pay $10, you get a solid game, and you continue to get content over time without paying anything else. $10. Yeah, yet Fortnite is still making $50 million off of basically you pay what you want game.
Yeah, but there is, so that's kind of true, but in a way it's not, because most people aren't paying just $10.
Right.
They're paying...
Well, I'm just saying, like,
they're pumping in like $60, $70, $80 to the game.
Because right.
In that way, like, and for most of us, yeah, $10 is one thing, but the vast majority of people, like, the reason why that money is growing the way it is because people are buying the $10 and then they're getting into that addiction of like, oh, this is awesome, I want this stuff. And they have daily specials where it's like, here, you can buy Nemo for $2.50, you can buy this for $4, you can buy that, and the people are like buying into that. So like,
right,
that if you just had the $10, they wouldn't be making the money that they are right now.
Well, no, I understand that, but I'm saying having this thing where you can pay what you want, I think that's a better deal. Because I mean, yeah, you can just pay $10. Like we both paid 15, right? You paid 15?
No, I paid 10.
You paid 10?
Yeah.
And you still got the, so anyway. So we both, I paid 15, he paid 10, but we were able to get this stuff, and now it allows you to not have to pay anything if you don't want to. And obviously it's a good game. People want to support this game and they want the stuff that they're offering. Like, you know, now they're getting more money from people. If it had just been a $60 game plus DLC, what is that? It could have been like $100 or more, you know, right off the bat if you wanted to do that. But now it's like, oh, I like this, so after 3 months, I'm going to give you $10 more because I want to get this. Or after 4 more months, I want to, you know, drop all this cash if you want to. And I think that's a better deal for the player because it allows you to decide where your money's going to go and how much you actually want to spend.
Yeah.
And yeah, I know they are marketing to you in a degree where like you can get carried away with yourself, even if you, because, but that just goes to show that this game is so good that people want to don't give this money to them. That's where I'm coming from. I mean, we can talk about Heroes of the Storm and how that works.
I'm struggling to think of like where to take this conversation because like I have so many things I want to say, but I'm like, I don't know which direction I want to take it. It's like,
just go somewhere. Well, here, let me drop Heroes of the Storm real quick and then we'll
just go for it.
Yeah. So with Heroes of the Storm, I found myself, that was probably one of the first games where I was like, here's a microtransaction, but it's on my terms. It's not their terms.
Yeah.
Which I would say Destiny is. I mean, you can argue that it is on your terms, but it's not in your face like, hey, come here. Hey, do this. Hey, we're tempting you to buy this. It was, you like this game? Everyone has the same skins, but if you want to look different, you can buy this skin and look cooler, which I found very tempting because I started getting really good with Artanis and I was like, I want him to look cool. There's all these cool skins and I could work up to this, but I'd rather drop this money now, which I'm having really fun with this game, which I think deserve my cash, and I will give it to them. And now I feel content with what I had. So I bought like, I don't know, maybe 5 skins, not all Artanis, but like throughout some of the people I played. I even bought one character. Was it Sergeant Morales or Lieutenant Morales, which is a healer? And I was like, hell yeah, like I feel good. I can play this game. I look cool. I'm good. I maybe spent $30 or something like that. Like, that's it. I didn't have to spend $60 on this game.
Yeah, I bought a skin in Overwatch for D.Va because I play her a lot. So I picked up a skin for that. And that was awesome because like I'm not going to buy a skin for like Hanzo because I don't ever play Hanzo. So it's like, what's the point of that? But I did buy one for that. I think what I want to talk about is that, you know, the free-to-play model doesn't work for everything.
It does not.
It just works for, because we started this conversation with Shadow Tomb Raider.
Right, right.
You can't do that free-to-play. It's not possible.
Yeah.
So it's not the single-player answer, games. But it is definitely an answer to certain items, like certain things. Like, I think the free-to-play model is good if you are building a multiplayer game that you want to keep an ongoing. I think that's really the way all multiplayer games should be, is free to play with the addition of, well, no, I don't, I disagree with that too, actually, because like not everything I should have like these cosmetic things that we have are good for certain types of game experiences.
Right.
Like Fortnite, it makes sense because you can have fun with it and get really outlandish with it and be silly, and it makes sense in the context of the world that they've created. Overwatch, it makes sense to put silly characters in the context of the world that they created.
Right.
PUBG, you can't do that.
No.
Like,
no.
You can't have PUBG be free to play because what are you going to create in PUBG that brings revenue that you can consistently create over and over again?
Well, I think that's
without
they,
adding a silly aspect to it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like, well, you almost have to have that
wrong with that. Like, they haven't created a system to allow that.
But I mean, like what I'm saying is like, how can they, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could do it like, well, I guess you can't.
Yeah.
What do they do like, for CSGO? Cause I mean, that's basically what they're trying to do. It seems like that.
Yeah, they,
I mean,
they CSGO
do a little
bit
is making
that.
Money
they sell,
from that.
They sell skins and things for the guns.
Right.
So like there is something you can do with that. And that's what they've done in PUBG is they've added skin purchases. So like you were talking about my M4 gun that I got, that was something I bought.
Right.
that I bought a key for a weapon. Mm-hmm. I got a loot crate that gave me a weapon skin. So they've added weapon skins in there that you can either buy or sell. So there is some value to that, but it has to be like, it has to make sense within the context of the game that you're playing. PUBG, like clothing, like they can't sell cosmetic clothing in there. They've done it a little bit. They've kind of pushed the envelope slightly, but it's, you don't want people running around with like clown hats on in PUBG. Like it looks stupid and silly, but in Fortnite, it doesn't.
I don't know. I think that'd be kind of creepy if someone went around with a clown hat or something. I don't know. I think they need to rework PUBG a little bit. I think it's they've been too stiff with what they've created, and I think they need to kind of break that mold a little bit.
Yeah, but I mean, is it because of? I mean, it's because we've seen Fortnite do it and it works.
Yeah, yeah.
But is that necessarily the right path for PUBG?
I don't know.
Because PUBG is a different game. It's a different...
I understand, yeah. They need to sit down and really think. They have.
PUBG's main issue right now, like for me, like PUBG's issue, I hate that we're back in the Fortnite conversation, but like PUBG's main issue for me is the balance and the optimization.
Yes.
Like if they fix all that, like I'd play that game in a heartbeat more again. Right, and they also fix the circle because the first circle just is way too big and needs to be condensed down more.
Right.
But I don't want PUBG to have a bunch of cosmetic bullshit. Like when they added the loot crates, like I was perfectly content with that game before that. I paid $30 for it. You know what I pay extra money for in that game is I would pay extra money for the skin. So I think that's a good addition. I would pay extra money for I would probably pay money for outfits if they did something that was still contextual within the world. The emotes I think would be cool, you know, adding some of that. So there's some things you can throw in there, but you just can't be like, you can't push it too far, I guess. I thought I would pay extra money for maps, but you don't want to segment that audience. But I don't know, maybe. I mean, you could add like DLC map packs, like the next map comes out, like pay $5 and you can get that map and play with your friends. But then that segments your audience, which is kind of a negative. But so back to the original origins of like the free to play conversation. Yeah. Like I think it's definitely very, it's very powerful. It's very successful. But it's not always successful because like Battlefield Heroes tried it way back when, and it just wasn't the right time for it to work. They did the exact same thing that Fortnite's doing now. And that game bombed. Like it did not go well. Like people played it for a little bit, but it just did not.
It was a browser client.
But that's not. I don't think that was a deterrent for it necessarily. It was that
I thought that was kind of weird.
Well, it is weird, yeah. But like, it's not going to stop you from playing the game. I mean, you have to download a client for Epic for Fortnite, you know, to play Fortnite.
I thought you played it in your browser, like on the internet.
No. Like the game popped up in the game.
Oh,
like
okay,
it popped up as an application, but you launched it from the website, but it pulled up into the game. It had a downloadable game on your system that would run.
I gotcha.
But
that was a different time and place. It was
a different time because you couldn't
increments. That's why we got here. We've done increments to get to this point now.
Yeah, because back then, like you couldn't justify. People were still not justifying microtransactions in mobile games yet.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't understand like, oh, I have to pay $2 for this, another $5 for that. Mm-hmm. Like that is, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, right.
So like it was definitely not a time and place thing. But now I think we need to see a shift in, I mean, these games are just getting way too expensive and they shouldn't be that pricey.
But I mean,
what can we do change that? Yeah, we are.
I mean, why do we need a shift?
We need just a shift because it's getting outrageously expensive.
Okay.
And there's too many games being made that are competing for attention. Mm-hmm. And like this year we talked about like there's at least 50 games coming out this year that probably cost $100 million to make that the majority of people are going to be able to play two or three of those games. So half of those studios are going to be spending all this time and money on game that's not going to be played. So what can we do to make it to where either more people have time to play more games, or the games are shifted as an industry so that like my thing is, why do we have to have a game like, not bashing God of War, but just because Kratos is in front of us, like why do we have to have a game
don't listen,
that
Kratos.
Like why do games have to have so much extra side content in them? I mean, people want that, but why do they want that? Like why do we need to spend so much time on?
Off the top of my head, I would think
they've created this world and this universe that people really enjoy and they wanted more of it, right? So,
but what about like
providing more value, more bang for your buck, but then obviously that goes on the cost and eventually they get that all back. So hopefully I'm trying to think that out. I mean, technically they don't need that. They don't need to add more. And that's become a staple in games right now, especially with the open world.
I mean, a lot of people want to 100% a game. Like they feel like they've achieved something if they get everything. They do all the side missions, they do all the main stuff. But me, as a player, I play all the main stuff and that's it. And I get satisfied with that. Like I played South Park Stick of Truth as a $60 game. I played the main, actually I did 100% South Park Stick of Truth, ironically. But the reason for that is because there was just, almost 100%. I didn't get two of the collectible things.
That's not Brett. That's not Brett.
It's weird. Yeah, it's weird. But that there was just enough side stuff where it wasn't overwhelming that I didn't feel like I was going to spend countless hours doing it.
Right.
Like some of it was kind of just, it was the natural progression of the story. Like you pick up a couple quests and as you're walking to one of them, there's another one that you can go off and do on the side. And then I could do that easily. I know God of War has that in there too, where there's just a quest kind of on your path as you're going. But my thought is, what if they put less time into making all these side quests a little bit, putting some of them in there, but I'd like to see think about Horizon Zero Dawn. When that game came out, there were side missions and stuff like that, obviously.
Right.
A lot of content in there. But then what they did that I thought was really clever, I don't know from a financial perspective if this was successful or not, but they added the Frozen Wilds DLC. And that was an area of the world that they had created that they added content into as additional DLC later on. So you had the option to buy into that, pay the $15 to get that additional content and explore part of a world that was already there, but you just never got to go to it. And that's kind of that was interesting to me and makes sense.
So would you say some of the side content could be put into DLC to expand this universe and making
to kind of be an alternative to a free to play,
right?
Like just add more paid. So shorten the core game a little bit, which is I don't think, I mean,
so you're advocating for people to spend more money on content that should already be in there.
But should it though? I mean, if you put,
I don't know.
About this, if you play God of War, so here's another thing too. This is going all over all kinds of different tangents, but
it's hard to quantify this. This is really hard to nail this down.
Because some people look at the value of a game as how much time you put into it. Mm-hmm. Like you spend 30 hours on a game that justifies a $60 game. But then some people say The Witcher 3 with 100 hours of content
that might be what they're trying to do. They're trying to quantify this is going to be 30, 40, 50, 60 hours for this much.
Yeah. So it's like Far Cry 5 is a $60 game and there's all this side content and crap that they put into it. If you played the story and then finish all of that, maybe did some of the side quests or whatever, paid $60, would you be content with that or would you not be content with that? Would you feel say they stripped out the side content and just had the main story? We went from the three areas, completed it, you put 25 hours in that game, called it a day. Would you be fine with that $60 price point?
At the quality story that they presented, yes, I'd be fine with that.
So then take that idea that was a $60, then all that side content bring out as DLC later on.
Yeah.
That could, one, lower the cost of the initial development of the game, not stress these workers out to the point where they're
which we need to touch on.
They can't. Yeah. So another thing is that, a lot of these workers are pushed to their limits. Video games are destroying the people who make them. It was an opinion article on New York Times. And it's no doubt, every game company you work at, you are going to be working long 15 plus hour days. At some point during your career at that place, you're going to be working a long time. Most of the time, it's a good 5-6 months where you're working work is your life. That is kind of how it translates into things because they're working on such tight deadlines to crank these games out. And there's so much they have to develop. Mm-hmm. So many skins, so much side content, so much dialogue, all these things. And it's insane.
Making a video game, especially AAA video game, is quite a feat. Coming from a movie background and then us kind of just researching what goes into the stuff, just for indie developers, God, I can only imagine the AAA developers, all the stuff, all the planning, all the people, all the organization. I don't want to make a game.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Just let me play them.
I mean, I think the point that I'm trying to make is that games have gotten too big and they don't need to be that big.
Okay.
But we
and
have,
it's hurting people.
And it's hurting people.
Too much
it's
money.
Costing too much money. It's hurting the industry as a whole because now these microtransactions are coming into play. It's like, how can we add more money into it? Well, it's really easy to make a couple skins, but cut out those extra skins that you're at, like these microtransactions you're adding to a game that have no real added value to the game. Save that time on that, build some extra story content for the game, sell mm-hmm. that for like an extra $10 and see if that can help finance the stuff. But it does and it doesn't. I think they just like the fact that they can have five people dedicated just cranking out new skins and new visual content.
Right.
That it's easier
right.
to build that than it is to not.
So I got 2 points. One is now it's been a standard. So some game and now has created the standard, for example, The Witcher and all its side content, with now we, as a player, expect that kind of content from all these AAA games. So everyone's just trying to keep up with each other, right?
Yeah.
I think God of War was perfect with its side content. It wasn't too much, but there was enough there for you to go and explore, spend an extra 10, 15, 20 hours doing other stuff if you wanted to. And what was my other point? Something about money. I forgot.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But I mean, I think God of War is a good example because I think that based on what I played, and I know you finished and everything like that, like there is side content there. There is an open world there. There's a world to explore, but it's just enough. It's like I said, it's like South Park or that's a bad example, really comparing it from like God of War, because God of War is on a whole nother level. But like God of War had just enough there that it tickled people's fancy or whatever. But it didn't have to have like overly large amounts of stuff. Like Far Cry 5, right. It sounds like it's got like 60 hours of content.
Yeah.
And I'm sure 20 of those hours of content is like stuff that half the people aren't going to see and mm-hmm.
yeah.
is like wasted energy. I mean, like some of the things are like useless, repeated.
It's so big and so much in there.
Things.
I don't want to go see it all.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's beautiful areas to explore and hidden secrets that, you know, people who love to dive into one game are going to do it, but that's far and few between the people who are really going to experience all of the content. And yeah, they could have spent a lot more time on the story, but then again, that's what people expect now, especially from a Far Cry game.
And I guess
it's
kind of
sad that
like why,
we're part of the problem too. Like,
yeah, like how have we gotten to expect that? I wonder where that came from.
I know. Like, I'm curious too to know how that kind of came into all this.
I mean, I guess Grand Theft Auto was the first one to like really put an intense, like exploratory world into their game where like there's all this side content and quests that you could go on to and stuff like that to do other things in the space. But like Rockstar is another good example of that. They did a good job they built a game, a single player experience that was $60. That was incredible. Tons of shit to do. I didn't do half the stuff that was in there. I never did the yoga. I never did the golf. I never did any of that stuff. But that was, I mean, yeah, other things that I feel like aren't necessary. But it's good talking points for like, oh, hey, you can play golf in this game. Or like somebody was talking the other day, like, I love it when games put a game within a game. Like, I love being able to do that. I'm like,
that's so,
it's silly. But I did get a kick out of it when I could play Crash Bandicoot in Uncharted 4.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was kind of cool. But like
it's little Easter eggs, you know, that really shine through. But I mean, going through the trouble to put multiple mini games in a game.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
I think games could scale back and still provide a good enough experience for people that it can justify the cost of the $60 and make it to where you can output more games or really what needs to happen is people need to be spending less time on the games so that they can play of the market.
Right. All these big AAA titles are coming out. We're going to spend multiple hours, multiple days, possibly multiple weeks trying to complete them. Like, how many weeks have you had God of War and not finished it yet? There's so much to do, so much to complete. There's other games.
Well, we got lives outside of games.
Yeah, it's like
too.
We don't have time to spend 80 hours on a game. Oh, the other point was we even talk about online games with subscription fees. You know, you drop $60 and then you have a fee of like $10 every month to this continually updating product.
See, that's something I think that they should kind of bring back again.
You like the subscription plan?
I didn't when it first came out, like World of Warcraft. Like that was like I refused to do that. But now that we have all this like free to play bullshit,
right?
I mean, not that's bullshit, but like I like it. I definitely do in like certain contexts, like I mentioned before. But I think Like, look at World of Warcraft. Like, there's a reason you're paying that $10 a month. It's to bring all that new stuff out.
Yeah.
And like, then they bring out DLC that you do have to pay for, but it's like huge, substantial bits of content. So you're basically like getting new games every 3 or 4 years.
Right, right.
And then paying the $10 a month or whatever to keep that world going. Like, in a way that could be worthwhile as a replacement for free to play, is just put a subscription fee on there. Like, make it to where.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it would. If I was paying $5 or $10 a month, and I knew that every month I'd get some new content that would drop, just included in there, like as part of that subscription, I might be able to be justified by that price,
right?
But then that's, I guess, a forced entry into paying a monthly fee that you're not really choosing. But I mean, you could still play that game and then just opt to. No, maybe not. I don't know. Like, opt to do the monthly fee to get, kind of like the battle pass where you pay $10 and you like get all this stuff during that period of time. Well, instead, pay like $3 a month and then be guaranteed to get something new every month that adds to your experience or heightens your experience in that game, including new DLC content or something like that.
Right, right.
There's so many different ways you can put it. Because, Destiny has their thing where they bring out the game. They bring out all the content throughout that period of time. They do updates and stuff like that. And then it's like, here's a new DLC drop. You can buy this. So they kind of do what I was talking about a little bit. But I don't know. I just think we're getting too big with games. We need to scale back.
Right.
In some way to make it to where we're not so overwhelmed. Because this year, it's like, we're not going to be able to play everything. We're not going to get to every game that's out there. And I mean, yeah,
we don't have enough money for
there's more developers that are coming out by the day that are just like building new and new games.
Yes.
But
yes,
like, how do you solve that problem of like, I mean, you can't play everything. So how do you solve the problem of good developers getting shafted because there's too much noise?
Right.
So
we're kind of all everywhere, but I mean, there's a lot to cover with the cost of a video game. There's so much that funnels into everything, and it's almost like that mountain that just spreads out. Like, it all starts from this point, and I don't know. I mean, I guess there's a lot of points, but this is one that kind of is up there.
I wonder if we'd ever, like, if it would ever help us to revisit the whole episodic content kind of thing. Like, we tried, that was a thing that was tried in the industry for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Half-Life was going to do it. There was another game that came out at one point that was episodic content that didn't do very well.
All the Telltale games.
Obviously, Telltale games have done it.
Oh, yeah. Like, what's that one with the girl and she...
Life is Strange.
Yeah, Life is Strange.
Yeah. Like, what... I mean, those are all... Those particular ones are adventure-like games, but what if... Like, what if God of War wasn't served as like one big game drop? What if it was served up as like five, like a TV show? Like, here's five episodes. You pay for it up front for, I don't know how you continue to get the revenue for that.
Yeah.
But I'm like trying to think of like if you pay for it up front, you pay $60, that buys you into the next four or five content drops. But you play a little bit, people start talking about that and be like, oh, this is so cool, blah, blah, blah. But you don't know the ending yet.
Right.
And then the next content drop comes out and it like brings up media attention again. Another content drop comes out, keeps media attention going. And then finally the ending comes out like, holy shit, that was so good. And then you can wait to the, but the problem is, I guess too, is that people might just wait to the end and then buy it then. So you're not really getting a good figure on what you're, like how much money you're making off of it really in the end. And if you're covering your expenses, but.
And then what's the drop off rate? Towards the end, we paid all up front.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's just the standards that have been made, and people just follow them.
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't know if episodic content is in the form of Telltale and stuff is the best way to go.
Yeah,
I mean, you could say that World of Warcraft's episodic content.
Yeah,
in a way, comes out every 2 years, 3 years, right. Something. I don't know.
I don't know. I do think we're gonna see a shift in the next 3 to 5 years where we're going to either the $60 price point is going to change and something else is going to come out. Free to play may replace it completely, or free to play is going to change and they're going to come out with some new kind of model that will help. I don't think these models that we have in place now are the right paths for long-term success.
I gotcha.
Either that or we're in a bubble and we're just going to see a bunch of companies just die off and then start forming collectives that, you know, like 10 independent developers just form together and make one big, huge collective group.
That'd be kind of cool, honestly.
You know, build their little side projects that they bring out and then work on one big, huge game.
Right.
So like 80-20 kind of split where like
that'd be cool.
80% of their time is spent on this big, huge thing that they're all putting their minds together on. And right. then the 20% of the time is spent on there's other little projects they're doing, whoever wants to work on that'd whatever. That'd be
cool. Like have a flagship yeah. game and then everything else. Just kinda, yeah. That'd be cool. I would dig that. Yeah.
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 So that could be something they do. But yeah. anyway, sorry, that was a long discussion. It kind of went all over the place, but it's something interesting to talk about. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of stuff there to think about, and we don't know what the answers are. So, I mean, like, if I'd like to know from the community that's listening to this, if you're still listening to this
or watching
that, you know, let us know if you have any ideas about ways that developers can change their models, their subscription models or their pricing models or whatever to make it better. If you have any thoughts or ideas on that, or if you're like, I think free to play is the way to go, or I think that, you know, this certain way is the way to go. I mean, we know that just paying $60 is not the way anymore because there's a reason why microtransactions and free to play has come out. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Give us your thoughts. What do you think the best approaches have been and what the worst approaches have been? And, yeah, let us know. Give us your feedback. We'd love to hear about it. So that's going to conclude our discussion topic this week. If there's a topic that you want to hear us talk about, please email us at hello@theinnergamer.net. Don't forget to check out our video of this segment on Thursday at youtube.com/theinnergamer.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Looking forward to next week. Let's talk about our upcoming video game releases. We have 5 titles to talk about. Some of which, most of them are like collections, which is kind of ironic that they're all coming around in the same week, but that's okay. First up, on the 17th of May, we have on PC a game called Far: Lone Sales. This is a game that not many people probably know about, but I thought it was intriguing because it's got a pretty cool looking just visual style and aesthetic. But this is a game in which you traverse a dried out seabed littered with the remains of a decaying civilization. Keep your unique vessel going, overcome numerous obstacles, and withstand the hazardous weather conditions. How far can you make it? What will you find? I relate this game to FTL. I don't know if you ever played FTL, Fashion Light or whatever. It looks like a kind of thing where you have to manage systems inside your little boat ship thing and keep it moving with management. That may not be actually accurate at all, but if anybody's played FTL, it does remind me of that a little bit, but it's got a lot better looking visuals. And it's just, it looks cool. You're in a vehicle and you're trying to make it traverse the land, and it's kind of post-apocalyptic in a way and very just odd, but pretty.
Wow, this actually looks really cool.
Right?
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Please tell me it's going to be on the Switch.
No, PC.
Oh, damn.
Eventually, maybe. So
this is really interesting. Okay, go ahead.
Hell yeah.
Next one.
So on the 18th, on the Switch, here you go. Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition. This is a new ultimate version of the exhilarating action game set in the Legend of Zelda universe. It includes every map and mission plus all 29 playable characters from the Wii U and the 3DS versions of the game, along with all the paid content. Play as Link, Zelda, Midna, Skull Kid, and dozens more in action-packed battles at home or on the go. This sounds like it's a fighter game with Zelda characters.
It is.
I've never played it.
Well, it's a remastered, so.
Well, yeah. But
a lot of people have already played this.
Yeah.
It came out on the
Wii U and the 3DS.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
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 It's going to be good. I'm going to get it. I'm playing it, so we'll find out about it.
Is it two-player?
I don't know,
actually. Well, it is two-player, actually. Yeah, because it's a fighting game, so I would assume you can fight each other and stuff.
Well, no, you go up against right waves of enemies and stuff like that.
But then we can fight each other, too.
Hopefully.
I'll take you out.
Dude, there's too many games coming out. I don't know if I can play all these at the time. I got reviews that I got to do, too. Review codes. There's just too much.
too much. Speaking of which, on that same day, so you have to decide between these two, the Little Nightmares Complete Collection comes out. And this is the game that, if you remember Devin talking quite a bit about, Little Nightmares is a little platformer. It's very creepy, kind of eerie, reminds us of Limbo a little bit. The description goes as follows. Do you remember your childhood fears? Immerse yourself in Little Nightmares, a dark, whimsical tale that will confront you with your childhood fears as you help Six and the Kid escape from the mall, a vast, mysterious vessel inhabited by corrupted souls looking for their next meal. This game features the DLC included. So if you want to play Little Nightmares on the Switch, now you have it. It's coming out on the 18th. Next, we have also on the 18th. So you got three things to choose from. This is actually a pretty big, much anticipated title for the Xbox One and PC. State of Decay 2 is finally here. State of Decay 2, the dead have risen and civilization fallen. Not even the military could stop the zombies. And now it's up to you to gather survivors and build a community in a post-apocalyptic world, a world where every decision matters and where you define what it means to survive. This game is the ultimate zombie survival game in an open world where you and up to three friends, count it, three, co-op, three, build a community of survivors. It's up to you to establish a base, develop your character's abilities, and manage resources to survive as a group in a world where choices matter and every decision has lasting consequences. So if I kill Austin, he will never exist in the game world again.
Thank you.
There you go. There you go. Last but not least, we have on the 22nd of May on the Switch, Mega Man Legacy Collection. Jump into the 10 classic Mega Man games coming to the Switch. Play all of the Blue Bomber's six original 8-bit quests, which includes Mega Man 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. It also continues the adventure with the series Evolution and Retro Revolution across Mega Man 7, 8, 9, and 10. These are bursting with additional content from the Trials and Remix challenges to a music player and an extensive galley of rare illustrations. Yeah, basically, I mean, this is a killer deal. You get 10 Mega Man games in one collection.
For how much?
I don't know.
Okay.
Does it matter?
I guess it doesn't matter. If you love Mega Man, this is
anticipation of Mega Man 11.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Actually, oh my gosh. It's gonna be cheap. $39.99.
Interesting.
Yep.
Cool. That's awesome.
That's it.
I got a few I'm looking forward to coming out. Actually, there's a lot of games I'm looking forward to coming out this month, which is not good. This is supposed to be the summer lull. Okay, I can't finish Pillars of Eternity. Yet.
That's June, July.
Is it really?
Yeah.
This is like the beginning. There's not. Are they trying to get this out because there's not going to be any other games out coming out in June, July?
Maybe. Well, no, because then you have. Well, we still have Detroit Become Human this month.
Jeez.
The next month we have a lot of games coming out. July we probably have a lot of games coming out. I don't know. Like we just got this year.
My backlog
is so bad.
It is. It is way worse because of the
really
Switch.
Bad coming up
because of Switch.
Yeah. Just wait. September is when it's all going to go downhill. You got Spider-Man.
No.
Red Dead Redemption's coming out.
No.
Battlefield 5, Call of Duty 4, Black Ops 4, blah, blah.
This is not good, man.
I mean, who knows? Bethesda's probably going to drop a game that we don't know what it is yet.
Anyway.
So much shit.
Good deal.
All right, cool. Well, that's going to wrap up our show this week. Be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more from your favorite video game podcast. Visit theinnergamer.net for our latest episodes, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on iTunes or tell a friend.
As you may or may not know, we have a Patreon set up for a way for you, our listeners, to donate to the cause in order for us to keep bringing you all this great content you want to see and hear. Even a dollar a day, or a dollar a month, or a dollar a minute. A dollar. Just give us a dollar of any kind at any point in time. And we'll keep bringing you this content every week. Plus, if you support us on Patreon, we have some awesome rewards waiting for you, such as being a guest on the podcast or getting exclusive content. So head on over to theinnergamer.net, click donate to contribute. My name is Austin Morales.
And I'm Brayan Oski.
And you listen to The Inner Gamer, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
The Inner Gamer!
We'll catch y'all next week. Test, test, test. Oh, no, the audio's messed up this whole time. What do we do?
No shit. Don't tell me that.
I told you that, Brett.
Wait, it is?
No, it's not. I'm just
better
joking.
Not be. Hello? No, I'm just kidding. That was too loud. Here I am.
Hello?
This is my normal voice.
Hello? It sounds wild from your...
Wild and crazy.
Great reaction.
Crazy. Crazy.
So this is how we get warmed up on the Inner Gamer.
I want to figure out how to do a rap. Should do the Inner
Gamer. Well, that's not how
rap.
You do it, Brad.
Yeah.
It looks like you're having a seizure, okay?